The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
The BVU Beavercast is proudly supported by alum and two-time All-American Monty Murs and High Country Search. Elevate your search at highcountrysearch.com.
Welcome to the Lodge. It's time to settle in for the Buena Vista Wrestling Beavercast. Join host Jason Bryant and head wrestling coach Jeff Brees as we talk all things BV wrestling. Now, on to the show.
Episode 22 of the BVU Wrestling Beavercast. Today we're going to talk with two-time All-American and the sponsor of the program, Monty Murs, a two-time All-American, as we said, for BV back in 1990 and 91. First of all, Monty, welcome to the Lodge here for the BVU Beavercast.
Thanks, sir. Glad to be here.
I mean, first of all, you got three welcomes, man. That's the kind of special thing that we do here with the Beavercast. But before we get going and talk about this year's team and how they're honoring the team in 1990 as part of the Wrestle-Offs, let's just get some background. You're a two-time All-American. You're originally from Arlington, Nebraska. And if I look this up correctly, it says the Wikipedia reference says it's simply I only got to village. It just said it's a village in Washington County. It's about as far as I got before I had to go, okay, where is this on the map? So you're outside of Omaha by a bit. I mean, so how does a guy like you and your brother Shane end up at Buena Vista back in the day?
Being in the village is probably, that's probably kind to it. And Shane and I grew up about 10 miles from town. So, we had, it was actually considered the city school to go in and graduate with a class of 39. So I don't know how we did it, but, it's actually kind of a funny story how it ended up to BV at all. I actually went to Nebraska my freshman year and I was a walk on 6 foot one, 126 pounder for the Huskers. And they didn't have a whole lot of need for that. As a matter of fact, they broke my hand 5 times in the first semester. And, it was the first time I'd ever seen a weight, anything. It wasn't probably wasn't a good D1 setup. And my brother Shane is a year younger than me. Was when he went off to school, he got recruited by some schools. And Baxter had him up for a visit, and he didn't have a way to get up there. So I told him I'd give him a ride. I had no intentions of, I kind of hung it up after the halfway through I got done first semester. So I told him I'd give him a ride up. And so Baxter was giving Shane the song and dance and I waited out in the lobby. He didn't have any idea who I was. I didn't have any idea who he was. I'd never even heard of BV. I just was there. And, He asked Shane who brought him up. He said his brother, and he's like, well, how much older? And he found out that I'd wrestled in Nebraska, and I had the grades to get into BV. And about, I don't know, 2-3 hours later, we were driving home, and I'd transferred.
So you went up there to basically, your brother needs right. You had no intention of, let alone wrestling, but even enrolling at the school. And I mean, Al Baxter, everybody have heard KJ Pilcher said stories, or Rick Caldwell been on the show telling stories about Baxter. What type of infectious attitude did this guy have on you guys in that era?
I had never heard of the school, Buena Vista, and I transferred there when I met him. So he was just an unbelievable dude. There's no way that you can walk out of first time you meet him. You don't leave feeling that he's the most amazing person on the planet. You feel like you are, and man, he changed my life.
Now, when you're going from Nebraska, I mean, why enroll in Nebraska to walk on anyway? I mean, what was the desire there for Division I wrestling at the time?
I don't know why it would have been a good idea for Nebraska by the time I was done at BV. As a matter of fact, when I got done at BV, I got a postgraduate scholarship from the NCAA from kind of, I was an academic All-American a couple times as well, and that kind of played pretty well. And so I went to grad school at Iowa, and I got to spend 2 years in the room with the Hawkeyes as a volunteer grad assistant. And, by the time I got there, I was ready to be D1. When I started, though, as a freshman, and I just wasn't ready for it all. I was overwhelmed. I grew up in Nebraska, and you grow up worshiping the Huskers as a football team. And they asked me if I wanted to come down. I bumped into Coach Newman one time, and you know, he knew who I was. I had some pretty good success in high school, and he just said, "Hey, come on, give it a shot." And I wasn't committed. I wasn't 100% burned the boats, and so it probably wasn't a good setup. By the time I was done, I think I'd have been a little bit more valuable to him.
Yeah. When it comes to the academic situation, I mean, where did you align with when it came to, you know, the book side of being a college athlete?
You know, the book side was probably the easier part for me. I suppose it's probably more like being a wrestler. Yeah, if you're going to make weight, you're going to make weight come hell or high water. And I maybe wasn't the brightest kid out there, but I didn't do any class that I wasn't going to get an A in. So if I had to study until 3 o'clock in the morning, then so be it. And, you know, I think I owe a lot of it to the athletics, because, you know, when you're trying to make weight, you're not out screwing around and drinking and being a dipshit, which I'm very capable of being in the off season. So I think it was a nice compliment.
I think all of us have been there in that part. At least some of us that were, definitely those that weren't the college athlete. When I'm raising my hand, since you can't really actually see this because this is audio. But now, following graduation, you got the post grad scholarship. You know, and you're heading down to Iowa City. And when does the idea to build businesses start? I mean, when did the spirit of being in business, right, with your country, high country search right now? I mean, where did those thoughts get planted, and when did they start to blossom?
You know, it's more of, I'm out in Denver. I'm in the recruiting industry, executive search. I've been doing it since I moved out here in 94. I graduated from BV in 91. I went to Iowa for a couple of years and got my MBA. So I hit the market at 93 and spent a year doing a couple short stints in Kansas City and Omaha for a sales company. And I just decided it was time for me to do something different. My six best friends in high school married each other, and I'm like, you know what, you guys do that, and I'll go ahead and check out the rest of the world. And so I just wanted to move to Colorado. I had ridden on the back of a garbage truck. That's what got me out here. And but I sat down to an interview to be a recruiter, and the guy said, you know, do you want to do this? And I'm like, sure, I'd love to. I said, well, you think you'd be any good at it? I said, hell yeah, absolutely. Well, why would you be good at being a recruiter? And I said, well, you know, I didn't understand really what a recruiter was at the time. And I said, well, you know, you said takes hard work. I'm a farm kid. You got to be smart. I got good grades. You got to be competitive. I was a college wrestler, All-American a couple times. Not gonna back down on that. You need to be a leader. You know, individual sport, but I was a captain of every team. I was, eventually the captain of every team I was ever on. And so, yeah, I mean, based on, you said you got to be that. That's what I am. And it was funny because he said, you know, that's interesting, because most people say something like, I'm a people person or something like that. And he's like, it's the people that screw everything up. You sound like pretty grounded, pretty get after it type guy. So the job's yours. And I got into recruiting and it just clicked. It was just kind of a common sense thing that worked for me. And I spent about 3 years with the first kind of big national company. And then spent about 5 years as I got started opening offices for another company and became a VP when I was 27 years old or something silly. And after 8 years of doing it for the nationals, I just said, you know, it's kind of time for me to try and do this on my own. I kind of figured out what, not only what to do, but what not to do. And, you know, I can't thank Al Baxter and BB and all my buddies who pushed me and made me what I am for, you know, without all that kind of stuff, never would have made it this far.
Yeah. And for those who are unfamiliar with what it is, like, for example, I've had non-traditional jobs my entire career. I mean, I worked at a newspaper when I was 17 years old. So, you know, I walked in, basically somebody told me there was an opening. So I went and filled out an application, you know, and then my jobs have been now, you know, whether or not I'm running my own shop or, you know, work, you know, knowing somebody through knowing somebody. My wife works in more of the corporate industry, so she kind of is more familiar with the recruiting side. But for those who are in that mix of like, okay, what does a recruiter do? I mean, it's, you know, we know Army recruiters, we know military recruiters, we know college recruiting. What does a recruiter actually do, and what does your company actually do to facilitate such things?
Well, basically, recruiting, it's a pretty simple deal. There's candidates who are people who want jobs. There are clients, which are people and companies that need a specific person. And, you know, the clients have a couple options. They can hire someone. They can hire someone right out of BV and train them and bring them up to speed. In about a year, they have somebody. So that's what most new grads do. But there's others who kind of need a plug and play. And they'll say, hey, I need a left-handed albino midget. If you find that person for me, I'll pay you. If you don't, I can find somebody else on my own that isn't a plug and play. So that's about the simplest form of what recruiting is. They tell us exactly what they want. And on a contingent basis, meaning I don't get paid unless I find one, then we go out and try and find it. So I do about 90% of my work for free, and every once in a while I get lucky and get paid for it.
So for lack of a better term, it's like a real estate agent for people.
Pretty much. I'm a headhunter. I go find people, and if I can't find them, then I don't get paid for it. So I'm a bounty hunter. But and then what high country, you know, high country is something I've been running this for about 15 years. I got promoted and fired all in one day. One day, lady was giving me a promotion into something that I didn't think I'd be as good at it. And I said, well, what if I don't want to do that? She said, she was shaking her head, said, we'd have to give you a severance package and you don't want that, do you? She was shaking her head no. And I was nodding my head yes and said, I'd go ahead and do that. And so I was really trying to just start a one man company where I would just go out and be a lone wolf and find people and just be left alone to do my thing. And I just got busy and I needed some more help. So I hired somebody and he never quit. He's still here. And we got busy again. And so I hired somebody else and she never quit. And 15 years later, we got there's about 30 of us we do a finance and accounting, permanent placement of finance and accounting here in Denver. We do oil and gas on a national level of kind of upstream land engineering, geology type stuff. Have an IT group, have a staffing group, which puts out temps. We run about 100 temps a day that are out working in different stuff. And we just opened up another division that does dental placements, dentists and hygienists and dental assistants and such. So it's just kind of spreading, and I don't know how much you can do about it at this point. Just, yeah, I kind of have that D3 mentality of just kind of pack a lunch and just keep doing it day after day consistently. And that seems to have worked out all right.
Yeah, so because I'm a one-man shop here, so you're saying that in 15 years I could have 30 people working on podcasts underneath me. I don't know,
and I don't even know if that's really what you want, but it could be. I don't know if I'd wish that on my worst enemy or I don't know. Just depends on the day, right?
It's a lot of production. Now, my curiosity here is, I spent 3 years in Colorado Springs. My daughter was born in Denver, so whereabouts within the Denver metro do you guys consider your home? It's not like I'm looking for an exact location of your office to come in and be like, "Hi, Monty," but you know, for those familiar with Colorado and Denver as a whole. I mean, you know, where are you at in the city, and what's awesome about Denver?
Where I live on the west side of town. If anybody's ever been to Red Rocks to a show or seen the YouTube concert video from the 80s where they're spinning around, I can see that off my back porch, and I can hear Red Rocks going every night and seeing the laser shows and stuff. So that's not such a bad thing. I see the sunset over the mountains every night, and I kind of giggle myself to sleep every night. And then where our offices are in Wash Park, which is kind of the middle of everything, kind of like Lincoln Park in Chicago. Wash Park in Denver is where all the kind of young urban professionals live and work. And you know, we're not too far from downtown, pretty close to Coors Field, where the Rockies play, and the Pepsi Center and Mile High or Sports Authority or whatever the hell they're calling it these days. So kind of in the middle of it. It's about a 45-minute commute, which you don't have to do in Iowa these days anymore. But that's the only, maybe the only downside of being out here. I love where I'm from. I wouldn't change a single thing of who I am and where I'm from. And you know, my wife is from Humboldt, Iowa. And so I get to come back a couple, two, three times a year. But at the same time, I found a pretty perfect spot for myself. I can do a lot of running and marathons and stuff these days, and a lot of mountain biking, and I can do it from my, I just leave from my house and it's right to the trails.
Yeah, because just doing some search, you know, knowing where Red Rocks is, never made it to a show out there while I was out there, so I'm kind of disappointed there. But you know, knowing the fact that I have spent a lot of time in Denver when my daughter was born there, so it was like, okay, yeah, I mean, Rockies games and I went to a Broncos game. So, I mean, definitely it's a great place to live. The one reason I know we had to leave is because, well, basically when you're on an island and you work in wrestling and your wife's from Minnesota and nobody else you know is there, we had to kind of – we shuttled back to the great state of Minnesota. But I tell you this, the state of Colorado, a tremendous place to live. So I definitely don't fault you for wanting to go to Denver by any means. Now, as we talk about this year's BV season, Coach Jeff Breese is going to honor the 1990 team. And with that 1990 team, you were part of that, one of five All-Americans that that really, you know, is one of the signature programs in BV in any sport. And, you know, just talk about that year 90 that, you know, you placed sixth at 158 pounds. You guys, you know, Rick Caldwell, who has been on the show, he was third at 190 pounds, the highest place winner that year. I mean, what was special about that 90 team? And what's it like to be brought back and honored by the, you know, we're talking 20-something years later. By the coach that's, you know, he was just still a kid when you guys were doing all these things.
Yeah, it was really cool. I think, you know, the probably the 89 team is what made the 90 team. You know, Rick Caldwell was definitely the big guy for us. And, you know, the year before was when Davey Jordan had won nationals. And I remember when I showed up in 89 and I think Brett Sweeney thought, I don't know, a few weeks into wrestling, into practice, because I hadn't done anything in Nebraska. I got hurt and really didn't get through any practices or whatever. I remember Sweeney asking me, you know, why are you here? What you're awful. There's no, you know, we didn't have the kind of competition in Nebraska high school is that everybody was used to in Iowa, and I was pretty bad. And for some reason, Davey and Ricky took me under their wing and said, you know, hey, just, I think, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of talent, but a lot, you know, I was pretty scrappy, I would say. And just whatever it took to do it, I was going to do that. And those two guys absolutely took me under their wing and kind of brought me along. And, you know, I didn't know any better. I honestly, I didn't start out even wrestling varsity in 89. And by the time I got to the national, to the conference, where I didn't qualify my first year, which was really my sophomore year. I didn't qualify, but I was the first alternate that didn't make it. And come to find out, everybody that made it around me, they were all Americans. And you know, when you wrestle in the Iowa Conference, it's pretty, you know, you're pretty much going to have two or three All-Americans, or at least at 58 those days, every tournament. And, you know, having you know, Kurt Chesmore was our 26-pounder, and Robbie Seal was our 34-pounder, I think, who all. Greg Hoeing was at 77, Ricky was at 90. That, you know, you kind of got your ass kicked every day. And if you weren't getting your ass kicked, you were probably kicking somebody else's ass and making them, you know, toughening them up. And so, you know, by the time we got out there, I think we took six people to nationals. And that was my sophomore year. It was Tommy Mashick's freshman year. And he was the only, I think that was, Brett Christensen was with us, probably seven people that qualified. And anyway, I just think that the quality in that room was so deep, and the quality in the room for a few years leading up to that was so deep. There are just so many of the older guys. And I think that's the big challenge for Coach Breese is that, you know, it's when you're building a program like this, if you don't have three guys from the last year that were all Americans showing people that, hey, you can do this. That's the biggest thing. I never, ever would have had that kind of success if I didn't, you know, have some guys pushing me. And you know, I went to nationals just going through. As a matter of fact, I made it, I won my quarterfinal match and blew my knee and I had to default down to sixth. I never even got to wrestle in the semis. So, you know, that's probably one of the highlights of my career was placing that year, and also one of the lowlights, because I never even got to, I never got to see what would have happened. So pretty frustrating, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because I'm looking through the place winners that year, and there's a couple things that jump out to me. One, you've got some of the traditional powers that they're the teams that are still, you know, at the top 10 today, you know, your Whitewaters, your Ithacas, your Del Valles, your Cortland States. And then you've also got the Iowa schools, Central, Simpson, BV in there. I mean, it's like as much as things change, they still stay the same. You know, I mean, John McGovern's in there. I mean, I'm looking at this and,
yeah,
you know,
he was the punk.
Yeah, he's currently the head coach at Dubuque.
No, he turned out to be okay, I think. If I checked the late, he got pretty tough. I was 0-1 against John McCover, by the way.
Now, as we move to 1991, you explained the injury in 90, but in 1991, you do place again, but it's eighth. You don't get the opportunity to reach the semifinal, you didn't have the semifinals the year before. But what was the difference between 90 and 91? Was it just a tougher weight? Was it individual performance, or was it just it's the way wrestling is?
Those are the two things that, man, you're going right for the throat. Those are two things that really made me I made semis my junior year, blew my knee, just had it scoped. Not a real big deal, but kind of got back up to speed. And then in 91, my senior year, I had no intentions of anything, but went in nationals. I think I started out the year ranked second. And at UNO Open, exact same thing happened. I got my knee wrenched again, had to have surgery on it a second time. They let me come back and wrestle after Christmas. So I had a leg brace from my ankle, just one of those big gangly 1990s braces from my hip to my ankle, just a big lockout deal. And so I only got, I don't even know how many matches I got, less than 20, probably my senior year. And it was pretty frustrating, to be real honest with you. I had a lot bigger plans for it. And a lot of guys that I look up to, did better than I did, but I think those are the kinds of things that make you who you are. I mean, I'm kind of the stereotypical D3 athlete. I was state runner up. I wasn't the state champ. I was an All-American. I wasn't the national champ. I'm just walking around pissed off with a permanent chip on my shoulder because of who I thought I could be. So, when you really get into the business side of it or really anything else in life, I kind of walk around nice and quiet and as pleasant as I can be, but there's a lot of pent up anger. I'm pissed. I'm still mad about it. But that's what keeps you warm at night, right?
Yeah, I was listening to Royce Alger tell stories about how, he talks about the match, even at various levels. He goes, yeah, the world silver still haunts me. The Olympic trials still haunt him. He says, I guarantee you there's high school coaches right now that never won a state title and their state championship, it still haunts them. And, the point is it's not just haunting, but it also builds it. Do you think you'd be where you are in terms of business and having your own country with High Country if you win a state title, if you stay at Nebraska? I mean, there's certain things. A state championship can turn you in a different direction with a school. A national championship can give you different opportunities. I mean, everything happens for a reason, right? But what are some things that you feel like if you did win what you were desiring to win, how do you think your life would change?
It wouldn't be for the better. I mean, you don't learn much from success. You learn from your failures and correcting those. And no way I wouldn't. Again, I would have loved to win my state championship match, and I would have won a couple national titles. And I'm sure that'd have been a great life. But I wouldn't. I'm pretty happy right now with who I am and what I've been able to do. But at the same time, when I look at, I kind of jumped online and checked out, all these guys that I look up to, because I just feel like, not like I let them down or anything, but I never lived up to what they did. And it pushes me every day. The ones that know me really well would know exactly what I'm talking about.
As we look at what Coach Brees is going through and being an alum and keeping an eye on the program through the last couple of coaches and, having wrestled for Baxter, you say you don't learn from success, you learn from failure. Do you have any tips for Coach Brees, who's still, year three in his young coaching career as a head coach? He wrestled Division I, so, he didn't win a national championship at the Division I level. He does have a state championship in a rugged state, so he knows success, he knows disappointment, but what are some words of advice that you have for guys like Jeff, and whether it's just a high school coach that's a BV alum that's going through the same thing he is as a college coach, things that you've learned through the business world and just your career that's like, hey, you know what? You can just push through this.
It's kind of hard to tell a wrestling coach what I learned on the wrestling mat, which got me there, but it's doubling all the way back. But I mean, it's, it's just grinding it out. I mean, there's nothing fancy about, you know, who I am, where I came from. It's just that I know I'm not there yet, and I got a lot of work to do, but I'm getting better every single day. And you know, it was easier for us to in 1990 come in and do what we did because of 1989, and for those guys for 1988. And you know, I've been able to pop in every once in a while when I'm going back to Humboldt, and you know, I look in the room and I see some nice kids, and I see some, you know, some really good things happening there, and they're building a lot of, you know, they're building it, but it's slow, and you got to be patient, and you got to know exactly this is exactly why I'm here and what I'm doing today, and I'm going to get better today and get better tomorrow. And you know, it's just it's over time. I mean, I'm an accidental tourist, and that High Country is a, you know, a big, you know, 30 person company and growing. And that was, you know, all I was planning on doing was do it really well every day, and good things come to you. And, you know, I don't know Coach Brees real well. I've been able to meet up with him a couple times and chat with him on the phone a few times. And, you know, I just, you know, High Country is sponsoring some of these podcasts, and I'm just like, I just want to give the guy a chance. I want to give somebody who has clearly got a plan. I'm really impressed by his organizational skills and his, you know, and his background. When he was talking about doing these podcasts, you know, I just saw what Coach Baxter did with nothing. I mean, he didn't have any resources, and he just, you know, scratched and clawed and made it work. And I just, you know, it's like Jeff shouldn't be out there trying to sell advertising. He should be in there trying to recruit candidate or recruit wrestlers and making them better. So as a matter of fact, I remember when we were there, we put together a, you know, some poster that, you know, some slogan or something, a wrestling poster, and we needed advertisements. And I went to John Brown at the bank, was a former All-American from, I don't know, 80s, you know, who knows when John was there. And I remember, I asked him if he would buy an ad, and he bought all of them. And I was just like, that's freaking cool. So I'm just trying to pay it forward from what John Brown did for me.
All right. See, now you've got my inner curiosity here, because I'm as being a stats dork that I am, I'm going to see what year this was, because the curiosity does kill the cat. So BV Brown, we're looking at 1982, sixth place at 190 pounds. So, John Brown, you get a shout out, sir. So now, as it talks about the podcast, this is one thing we're getting a little meta here for those using a tech term that's overused in some cases. I mean, we've got a Division III school that's got a podcast about Division III wrestling, and to be honest with you, the results haven't been great. And my other two clients, at least from a team standpoint, one's my alma mater at Old Dominion, the other's Virginia Tech. So we got two Division I schools and a Division III school. Do you think that what the podcast can do for a Division III program? I mean, it's thinking a little bit outside of the box and adapting some new technology. I mean, what's one thing that said, you know, you're paying it forward, but what's one thing about this medium? And it's like, you know what? This is something I can get behind, even though that, like, as we said off the calls here, this is not an ROI thing for you. This is not a return on investment thing you're looking for.
No. I mean, it's the podcast, it's just, It's a new world. I do a lot of different things with my company here, and I think that if you just kind of sit there and don't do things to get out in front of people and really you know, market your program and really create some buzz about what you're trying to do, people aren't going to come try and figure it out from you. You know, this is no time for modesty to be able to, you know, hey, come check out BV, and, you know, maybe you should call some people and ask how cool it was back in 1990. Cause, you know, Monty Mertz and Davey Jordan will tell you how tough they used to be, but that's not really going to help Coach Brees. Right. And I'm out in Colorado. I like tape everything I can off of the Big Ten network, but I just don't have much exposure. This is my chance to stay a little bit in touch with, you know, I run quite a bit, so I'll throw on a podcast and go for a run. But it lets you market what you are. And that was actually, honestly, I don't know how, I know Coach Breeze was pretty talented dude. If he was a D1 wrestler, then that makes him more talented than me, I suppose. But what I was impressed by was his organizational skills, his use of social media, his ability to go out and recruit those guys. I mean, I'm a huge Husker football fan, and now that they got Coach Riley in and they're doing it's their recruiting. You know, it's you can coach them up so much, but you gotta be able to get some people in there, create some excitement about it. And it's everything. You can be the best technician in the world and not have any of the organizational skills or any of the, the other things that go along with it. And we're not going to make any progress. So, I think this kind of stuff, it's everything. It's not just one thing. It's everything. And I think there's a lot of things that are coming into play that Jeff's using that are going to get in there. I mean, if he's got the patience to let these things all come to roost, they're going to be back. They're going to be strong.
Now in that 89 to 91 era, this is where I want to get a little bit of just maybe one quick story, maybe a fun trip from the road, because there's a lot of names in here. Again, we've had Rick Caldwell on the program before, and he's kind of told a few of those stories, and he's been a successful high school coach within the state of Iowa. You mentioned Davey Jordan in the national championship, but there's got to be one takeaway, one story that from that group, from those the era you were there, is like, you know what, this is a story that I can tell about my time at BV that kind of just basically captures everything about what the school, the wrestling program, and the guys meant to me.
I could probably get all of them in one story by it, because no one's raised their hand and taken credit for this one. But, my senior year at Nationals was, that was pretty rough on me to, I got eighth and I wasn't happy with that. There's so many hilarious stories and great stories, and I just hold them dear in my heart. But, once you're done wrestling and you get that one night before you go home, people get after a little bit, tear it up a little bit.
I wouldn't know what you're talking about, sir. I have no idea.
Nobody's raised their hand on this one, but I finally went to sleep about 4 o'clock in the morning, which ought to be safe, but it's not. And I woke up and Coach Baxter had said, no matter what, guys, you guys just be safe and be careful and don't do anything stupid. And, Christ all Friday, no fighting. Just be safe. So I woke up, went to sleep probably closer to 5 than 4, and I had everything just kind of my bag just laying there. So the alarm went off at exactly 8 and the bus was leaving at 8 to drive back to BV. And so I threw my bag over my head and went to jump on the bus, and Baxter grabs me by the shoulder and said, "What did I tell you? What did I tell you to do?" I said, "You said just be careful and we're fine, right?" And he's like, "I said no fighting." I didn't fight or anything. And they had somebody managed to shave off one of my eyebrows, so it looked like somebody knocked me out. They just had relieved me of one of my eyebrows and looked pretty silly and stupid. So anyway, we drove all the way back to BV, and of course they had a big party all set up for us when we got back to BV, and they just dropped us off and we went straight to the whatever cottage was having the post-national party. And I walked in and there were, I don't know, maybe 300 of my closest friends with, everybody had a Band-Aid over their right eyebrow. That was the theme of the party. That was at Monty. Everybody wanted to look like Monty and look like a dumbass. So,
oh, I love it. I love it. That's the stuff I'm looking for. That's the stuff you're only finding here on the BV Wrestling Beavercast. We're digging skeletons out of the closet, folks. But
whoever wants to fess up to that one, I'm looking for you.
All right. Well, we're talking with Monty Mertz, two-time All-American here. From Buena Vista, the man behind High Country Search. And in case you're in that recruiting world, tell us a little bit of where they can find you. Actually, I'll do that for you. It's at highcountrysearch.com out in Colorado. And Monty, hit him up. But Monty, I want to thank you for basically stepping up and sponsoring this program so I can continue doing this for Coach Breese. Jeff and I have known each other since he was in high school. And believe it or not, when I left the NWCA running Intermat, he was the one who took my job when I left. So there's been a long professional relationship with us. He's crashed on my couch in Pennsylvania. It's just the paths are crossed. And I'm glad that BV's on board for another season. I'm glad that you've stepped up and paid it forward, as you said, to sponsor this program. So I'm personally thankful.
No, I appreciate it. Good luck, Coach Brees. Love you, Coach Baxter, and all the boys, and go Beavers.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.